A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, Michael Anthony here. Van Halen, Chickenfoot, Sammy in the Circle. But anyway, you're listening to the only podcast that is dedicated to breaking down the entire Van Halen catalog one track at a time. And the podcast will rock. Ow!
Hello, baby!
What's up, all you rockers, rockettes, and everything in between? You have joined us for the live edition of And the Podcast Will Rocks Fuck It February. We decided to say fuck it. It's February. We're doing it live again. Hello. Thank you for joining us. I, of course, am your co-host, Mark Kamire. With me, as always, Corey Morissette. Corey, how you feeling tonight?
Oh, I'm feeling great. You know, I was a little worried that nobody was going to pop on the stream with us here tonight, but look, we've already got a full panel of guests here. Mark, I'll let you do your magic. You should know pretty much everybody on here, so you can let everyone know who's joining us.
Well, right off the back, we're gonna go to the Tom Petty podcast extraordinaire. You know him. He's always on our live shows because we love having him, and he loves to share his opinions. Kevin Brown, how you doing, dude?
I'm doing very, very well, and I realized after the last live stream that I'm going to try to share fewer of my opinions because I talked too much in that last one, so
more listening required. that's what these live shows are for, not just speak as much as you want. Also joining us, our super fan and friend and fellow podcaster as well, because he joined us on the show, Ryan Powell. How you doing, Ryan?
Hey, glad to be back on. This is a kind of deja vu.
Somebody has an open mic and is listening to the live stream.
Yeah, I was just like, my other stream's on mute, so it can't be mine.
Yeah, mine too.
There it goes. Oh, man. Also joining us, Scott Everett. Scott, welcome to the show, my dude.
Thank you, sir.
And who else is on the panel here? We got a lot. I mean, everyone just keeps showing up. Scott Monroe, George Solano, and of course, the guy that knows all about Van Halen. He's the expert. We are not. Eric Sinich. What's up, Eric?
There we go.
Hey,
hey guys. What's up?
Hey. How much? How you going? How's it going?
I just got back from seeing Cocaine Bear. Oh, and? My God. Oh, it was fucking hilarious. Absolutely hilarious. Do you guys know about this movie? You know it's a true story?
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. It happened near my neck of the woods.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. That's right, Mark. Yeah, Tennessee, right?
Yeah.
Hey, Mark, we got a fellow deep diver on, George. Welcome back, George. How's it going?
What is up, everyone? You've got George, and you've got another cameo coming.
Oh, another cameo.
Yeah, it's a pleasure for me to hop onto as many deep dive shows as I can. Excited to talk about a different band than I normally do. Corey, that background is fire, by the way.
It's not as good as Ryan's. Ryan had to outdo me here tonight on my own live show.
Oh, look at that collage in the back. Well, it's a pleasure to be able to talk to most of you for the first time. I don't think I've ever done a pod with Kevin or, well, any of you except Mark and Corey.
Yeah.
Yeah, man. There's new friends. Official hello to everybody who's on.
You know what? I want to know from everyone here on the panel, what is your favorite actual Van Halen song? We all know that there are probably a bunch of different favorites, but I'm curious if there is a particular favorite song and why. I would love to know from each of you, because I don't think I know it, why your favorite Van Halen song is. So, Kevin, we'll start with you.
5150, just because it's the song that got me into the band. You know, that was my first exposure really to anything beyond Jump. And that guitar riff, you know, it's just magnificent. So, yeah, definitely.
That's good reasons. Scott Monroe, how about you?
Yeah, I'd have to go with Unchained. You know, we talked on our episode about the best of a little bit. You know, that got a lot of replay on the best of for me. I think Matt said it best when you guys did that particular tune. You know, it's arguably the best song they've done. And it has everything going for it.
I will not fight against that assessment whatsoever. George, how about you?
Yeah, just like Scott said, I think, or was it Kevin? My bad. Just like Kevin said, we're drawn to the songs that sort of got us hooked on the band, the songs that got us into the band. For me, it's got to be Dance the Night Away, because I started with Van Halen too. And that was the song that, to me, it really stood out on the first listen. And I've got some great memories with that song. I saw Real Big Fish a few years ago, and they covered Dance the Night Away. And my wife and I were just having a grand old time dancing to that song. So I'll go with that one.
Right on. That's cool. You got a story behind it. Scott Everett, how about yourself?
I put it in the chat, and I actually left it on Eric's podcast a long time ago when Eddie passed, but Jump, and it's, you know, the purists don't always love that song, but it's what introduced me to the band, and I've been with them ever since. My parents were going through a divorce at the time when that song came out, and it got me out of the doldrums every day when that was going on, and still does to this day. So it's Jump.
Ryan, I think I have a pretty good idea of yours, but please tell us your favorite Van Halen.
Yeah, I probably tipped my hand when we recorded the last podcast, but Right Now is what got me into the band. It's different than a lot of the other stuff. I mean, when I first got into the van because of Right Now, I kept listening to other things, expecting more of Right Now, and I never got it. So it took me a while to kind of get used to all the other styles of Van Halen, but the composition, just the production of it, everything else, it's got to be up there. Of course, Unchained, and there are a whole host of other ones that would be right up there in that conversation, but go with the one that brought me here.
There you go. No shame in it whatsoever. Let's see, who have I got not gone to? Eric Sinich, how about you, man? Do you have a single favorite? You probably would say you've got a whole slew of them are your favorites, but is there just one that stands apart from all of them?
Yeah, I'm with Scott. Jump. And that was the song that turned me on to the band. And I was 12 when I saw the video. That was my first exposure to the band. Can you guys hear me? Oh, you there?
Yeah, it's all good.
What was that? Yeah. My first exposure to the band visually and hearing the song on the radio. And to this day, it's just a feel good song, man. I love it. I know there's obviously the detractors, those who want to hear Eddie play strictly guitar, but it's a great song, but also just a personal attachment to it. Mm-hmm. What got me into the band.
And I mean, and that is exactly what I'm looking for with that assessment, because, you know, it's easy to just say, it sounds the coolest, so that's my favorite, I guess. Like, no, if we all have particular favorites, and because there's a story that goes along with it. So that is a good insight to all of you and how, you know, what Van Halen kind of pulled you in. Corey, you still doing hosting things, or are we good to go?
I'm kind of still doing hosting things. Why don't you guys talk about what we can do tonight? We have a few different options, unless you guys want to do something else, because it's fucking February. I do have some new wheels that we could spin tonight if you guys want. We have the regular wheel if we want to do just a regular show. I have a solo wheel that features pretty much every solo song. I had to kind of cut back on the Sammy catalog a little bit, because his is so huge. So we have the Sammy anthology, and then his last five albums past that, plus all the David stuff, all of Extreme stuff, of course, Wolfie stuff, and Eddie's soundtrack from The Wildlife. And we also have a live wheel. I tried to grab different shows from different eras, including Sam, including Gary. So we have those wheels that are at our disposal here tonight. So you guys kicking around. What do you guys want to do?
My vote's for Solo. I would love to talk Solo. Sammy or Dave, preferably Dave.
Let's do Solo because I've never heard any of that stuff and I want a new experience.
So you haven't heard any Dave Solo, any Sammy Solo?
Maybe a little bit, like a couple of hits, but
sounds like the consensus is for the Solo wheel. That's what I'm getting. So we might have to just go ahead and do that. We're just going to change it up. We're going for a Solo song. That's good with everybody else. Nice. Corey, that's good with you.
Well, yeah, to start with, you know, I think we spin this thing twice tonight. So, you know, second spin can be whatever. So right now they're seeing the wheel, the Solo wheel, 258 songs.
Wow.
On this. Yeah, right on. So if you guys are ready, I'll play the tune and we'll spin this sucker.
Let's do it.
All right.
And we're going to get something from Waiting for the Punchline from Extreme.
Oh, wow. That's a really good album. Yeah. Yes.
I'm interested.
Oh, kick-ass album.
I think that's my favorite Extreme album.
Is it really? Yeah, nice one. Yeah, mid-90s, right? 95?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't
something
know.
Like that. It was the first one I picked up when I heard Gary was joining Van Halen. It's like, I got to check this guy out.
Yep. All right.
All right, talk amongst yourselves. I'm going to find the song.
So you're going to find the song.
This is the good Gary. Like, okay, so like, there will be no more apologies to Gary the rest of this show because this is good Gary.
Yeah.
This is Gary in his element. So we're ready to celebrate that.
Yeah, there was one single off of it, and it didn't do well because that was the grunge era. Let's see, Here today.
You'll be gone tomorrow.
You'll be gone tomorrow. Yeah, and it's dark. It's angry.
It's definitely the darkest Extreme album for sure.
Yeah, raw, very raw. And Nuno sounds very different on that. He's I'm trying to think. What was the song at towards the end of it, which I always love too. Let's see.
Think of that instrumental, the guitar solo one that's
Shadowboxing.
Shadowboxing, yeah.
It's like a Midnight Express one where he is like just killer like staccato, like resting on the muting the strings kind of thing.
Right. I got to see them on tour when they came here to Connecticut for that tour, and they were playing a club. They were playing a place called the Sting in New Britain, Connecticut, maybe I don't know, 1,000, 2,000 people.
That place still around?
No, it's gone.
Are you not a Connecticut guy?
Yeah.
We got more than one Connecticut guy on the call?
Yeah, man.
What's up? I'm in George. Stanford.
Oh, Stanford. Okay. Yeah, Southington, right near New Halen and Hartford.
New Halen.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, track listing. There Is No God. Tell Me Something I Don't Know. Cynical is track two. Tell Me Something I Don't Know. Hip Today. That's the one. That's the single. Naked Midnight Express is the instrumental. Leave Me Alone is awesome. No Respect is the one I love. Some really cool bass lines on this album, too.
So
Shadowboxing.
This was the last Extreme album then before Gary joined Van Halen. Is that
correct?
Is that the timeline?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. I think they're working on a new album as we speak too. Gary does various projects, but Extreme is still an entity. And then Gary's on tour with, he's going out on a tour with Joe Perry Project.
Joe Perry Project. That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
And actually tonight's song, Fair Weather Faith, not included on the US release.
I was going to say that didn't sound like a familiar one from it. So that's interesting. It'll be a new one for me, even though I know.
Same here. Yeah. Was that the start of it? Because that was sounds the start. About right. It's very raw. You can hear the guys in the studio.
Yep.
Hey, Scott Haskins has joined stealthily the call, joined.
Yep. Scott.
Oh, yeah. Hey, guys.
There's three Scotts to every story. That's an extreme album.
Yes, there you go. Well,
it's
played.
Also a great one.
Yeah.
Scott is our resident Uriah Heep expert as That's Corey right. still gets prepared.
That's right.
Scott, I got it. You know, I forgot to, I was going to email you that. The last album they have is fucking awesome.
Cast and Color. Just, yeah, it's incredible. Yeah. I specifically did not watch the videos they released before I started doing the reviews because I really wanted to go in just completely fresh, no preconceived thoughts or anything. And man, every single song blew me away. Absolutely.
Every single
away.
One. Yep. Yeah, really good. That was what it came out like within the last year.
About 2 weeks ago. It was the 23rd, I think.
That's right. Brand new.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All yeah, right.
Really, really good stuff.
Sorry about that. Ready to hear a little Fair Weather
yeah,
Phase from Extreme?
Right. Here we All go. Right.
Here we go.
Got their old production trick, cool. Hey, the guitars are panned way over in the right.
Like, oh,
just
yeah.
Way far over in the right hand side. So I'm kind of curious to see if Gary's just going to be hard on the left here. It's going to be interesting to see. Great drum sound, eh? Super, super flat and present.
Man, that bass right before you stopped it, just like twang in the string right there.
Yeah, Pat Badger. And this is Mike Mangini. I think this is the first album he's on drums. They had, I believe they had somebody before him.
No, this is Paul Gary.
Is Paul Gehry on this one? Okay.
Yes, he is, yep.
Okay, Mike Mangini is only on three tracks. Hip Today, Leave Me Alone, No Respect. All right, good call, Corey. Yeah, it's good stuff, man.
Yeah, pretty decent start. Like I said, I was doing producer stuff. Everybody on the call, pretty much a fan of Extreme, right? No apologies to Gehry tonight. Going to get some good shit.
Yeah, good band.
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, Kevin was air drumming and I stopped it. I thought.
Oh, yeah, I was air drumming the cowbell. I was just keeping time with that cowbell. Yeah.
I just wanted to say.
Drummers.
Did everyone catch a Super Bowl with Nuno Betancourt playing a guitar with Rihanna? I don't even think his guitar was plucked.
Oh, he was there? I didn't even
was
know.
Was he there?
He was there.
I don't know if he did anything.
I did not watch.
Wow. Hey, good for him, man.
I don't know
yeah.
if I'd recognize him now. I don't know if I'd not recognize him.
He looks the same, right? Same, oh, yeah. the long hair. He's rocking the long hair. Still looks the same.
Yeah. But again, like Rihanna set, I don't even think he had his guitar plugged in. Like, you couldn't hear the band at all. It was all pretty much pre-recorded stuff. So.
Yeah.
Well, Rihanna wasn't singing either, so that's where it was.
Yep.
That's it's not a new thing for the Super Bowl. They've been doing that for years and years.
Right. Yeah. Right.
It's just the same to get Nuno Betancourt on a stage and not get to appreciate him playing the guitar.
He's been working with her for a while, hasn't he?
He has, yeah.
That's the Extreme sound there, the harmonies.
Yeah, I was just reading the lyrics on this though too. And so the album opens with There Is No God. And then we're getting this one where they're really being, you know, there's no nuance angry. Here. They're not being subtle about their opinions on this place. So.
Yeah.
I think Gary was saying it was like from the heart, legit. He was pissed off about a lot of things because the music business had just turned upside down because of Nirvana.
Yeah.
And so all these record labels that they thought believed in them, you know, we're just like, see ya, we're not putting any money into your album, not doing anything for you, and they got pissed.
Yeah,
you know,
I want to go to the YouTube comments here for a little bit. Alan says the extreme. There's a lot of talk about the extreme Queen medley, because when you think of extreme, their Queen medley that they did for the Freddie Mercury tribute concert is unreal.
Oh,
like fantastic, yes. Right? Yeah, it's one of my favorite 20 minutes of music ever performed.
Yes.
But Michelle Kurlander says that's the only time I ever saw extreme at the tribute concert. Well, that's a pretty good way to see him. She also said, I love to watch that section of the concert. Also loved when Gary played with Deaky to get him smile. Yeah, there's a Gary came back and did a Hammer to Fall, I believe.
Yeah.
Surviving members of Queen. And yeah, he had a lot of fun kind of playing with John Deacon. That was really cool. Johnny Bean says, I run into Nuno at NAMM every year and he looks the same. So there you go.
Nice. Hey, Johnny.
Yeah. Thanks for chiming in, Johnny.
And you know, Gary sounds comfortable here. It's just, there's the Van Halen 3 album, there's just something so. He's just so uncomfortable. There's a lyric in that song you guys played last week where he's actually saying, where are we going? You know, and I'm thinking, man, how appropriate. He didn't know where he was going with those songs. Like they weren't songs that he really was comfortable with, but he just said, okay, I'll do my best with it. But there's a chemistry he had with Nuno. They wrote songs together. He's so comfortable here. He doesn't sound like he's pushing it. You know, he's in the groove.
I think that's a key word, comfortable.
Yeah.
No, exactly. That's a key word. He's comfortable. Like three, he never sounds comfortable at all.
I don't think he had any veto power on that album. So not like Sammy or Dave where they said, nah, not for me. Change that. Don't feel, you know, it was Eddie's project the whole way. And Gary did his best.
Well, not
Without You, I think is great. I'll defend Without You. I will defend, the second track on there. I was just listening to it the other day. Three.
Fire in the Hole.
Yeah.
Fire in the Hole is good. Yeah. I don't think Alex is on drums on that though. I think that's Ed on drums. Yeah. When I Want.
Yep.
Yeah. When I Want.
No, there's some tracks on there where he really does find a good groove, with Ed, but I think you're right. It was more of a one-sided thing. So it would have been really great to hear what happens after that tour where they really gelled on the tour. So
yeah, it's just disjointed. Like,
so is it right?
He's just so uncomfortable. Like, you know, like he's like, he almost is like, if you could read his mind, he's like, guys, can we not record this song? Could we just take a little more time?
In terms of process, because my understanding is that basically the music was essentially written and was sort of given to Gary and he came back with lyrics and just recorded him. So if you're not in the studio with the guys, because I mean, if that was the case, he could have said, hey, Eddie, instead of playing that riff here, for what I've got here, my flow lyrically, if you play that same thing and then we can use that, you know what I mean? Because I think for the most part,
that's what it was. He may have collaborated with Eddie a little bit. Like Josephine is about his mom.
Right.
So lyrically, that's his. All the lyrics were his, but I believe that it was mostly Eddie saying, "Here's what we got."
Yeah, that's tough, man. That's a tough gig.
And you know, and Eddie was. Eddie seems
a hired gun.
Yeah, but Eddie seems so sincere, like over the top. He's my new brother. We're like spiritual brothers. It's like we've known each other all these years, and I only think that he felt that way is because he wasn't getting any pushback, which sucks. Nobody wants to have somebody pushing back and telling you what to do and what not to do. It does suck, but look what it did with Sam and Dave.
Yeah.
I mean, it that back and forth, you know, it was just Ed was in charge. And again, Alex is not, I don't think he's not playing drums on all the tracks. And I don't even know if Michael's plays bass on all the tracks. If you listen closely, you'll hear it's like, if you listen to Sammy's 87 album, where Eddie plays bass on it. Listen to that and then listen to three. And you might pick up on like, yeah, that's Eddie.
Hmm.
Yeah.
All right, let's get back to Fairweather Faith.
Nice, Nuno.
Yeah, so like, good.
Come on. That dude.
That's just signature Nuno.
One of the most underrated guitar players in rock, like especially in modern day rock, dude.
Yeah.
People do not talk about him enough. He is so damn good.
So yeah. Is that, and I'm not a guitarist, but is that like palm muting where he gets that really short staccato sound when he's plucking it?
Pretty much, yeah. Like to get the staccato feel.
Yeah,
like
holding down the palm on the strings. Yeah,
on the bridge.
I think he's just playing it so quick too that there's
also
the string strikers, you know, it's crazy though. Hey, like those guys when you watch them too, like Van Halen's and Betancourt's, it just looks effortless. They play that stuff and it's like they're just throwing it away, you know? It's crazy. Yep.
They make it look so easy.
Yeah.
Is this the first time listening for everybody on the call? Like, I don't recall ever hearing this song before.
Yeah. I've never heard this before.
No. This is brand new. Yep.
And like it right away too.
Yeah.
I'm trying to decide if I like the snare sound or not. It's like it could use just a little more reverb to make it feel like it wasn't recorded in a studio, but the depth of it, that pitch sounds really good.
Yeah. It's up front. You can definitely hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Drums are loud. The guitar actually sounds a little too low.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah,
let's get back to her.
Yeah.
Wow, I blew it. No, I wasn't trying to stop the song. Okay. I have a touch screen.
Oh,
fuck me. Let's play the damn song. It's almost done.
Yes, I was going to say that, like, it's clearly about sort of Sunday Christians, right? Or Sunday sort of church goes, they do it for 1 hour a week, and that's then, but then they drop it after that. This is my bit now. Yeah. I've talked to the big guy, you know, I've checked in. It's like, go fuck yourselves.
It's all good. I could be a piece of shit for the rest of the week. I checked in. Exactly. Fair weather faith, 100%. Yeah.
Scott, I love how he comes in off beat back into the, like at the end of the four, he doesn't come in on the one again. It comes in, just drags and comes in on the either and or the two. Like, that's pretty cool. I like that stuff.
Yeah. Is there anything, Scott, is there anything like in the setup to get that kind of sound on drums? Like the way they're setting up the mics and the way they're, because it does sound like it's, you're like right there. It feels like you're like standing right next to the drum kit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just very really mixed high into the mix. I think the balance to kick and snare is a little bit off. The snare is really overpowering the kick. I'm not finding a good balance with the bass either. But mainly it's just a really raw sound. It's just like they put the mic right on the snare head almost, and they just really kicked it up. So it's not quite peaking on the board, but boy, it feels like it's close because it's not distorting or clipping, but man, it just has such a raw sound to it. It feels like the mic is picking up all the air around the snare.
Yes.
And not just the snare itself.
Yeah. Absolutely.
It sounds really similar to like Hip Today, the drum sounds on that, on the same album, obviously.
Okay.
Which was distinctive. I mean, for that song at the time, because that was sort of their hit at the time, and it starts in with just drums, with that little fill going into it. So,
Mark, you've been awfully quiet. I know you did a show last night, but you must have some thoughts on what you're hearing here.
What I'm not really digging about this so far is just the vocal choices Gary is making in the verses. It's like he's trying to be a little too blues heavy, you know what I mean? And he's purposely not hitting notes, like leaving them very flat, which is really bothering my ears. Because then when he gets into the pre-chorus and into the chorus, he doesn't do that. He like sings the notes straight and, you know, right on. So he's making an active vocal choice in the verses that, frankly, I don't think he should be making. But what do you do?
Is that partially then, Mark? Because if you look at, if you actually, when you read the lyrics, if you look at the number of syllables in each line, it's all over the place. Like, there's no consistency. So your cadence, he's got to really throw himself into, like, almost like a Whitney Houston thing where he's singing, you know, 50 notes to a three will do, right? So
he's literally making himself sound so, like, more blues and soulful than is necessary whatsoever in this song. And it, and I don't know, it just, with him just not landing on those ending notes, if you're going to do all those trills, at least do the trills right. Yeah. And he's just not landing on them, so it's hurting my ears. Other than that, the song is, it cooks. I really dig it.
Yeah, I think though that not having the same amount of syllables in every line is actually an advantage for a singer, because you're not stuck into the pattern of here's how this line goes and here's how the next line goes. Sure. You can really play with it and really emote and do some interesting things with your voice. I think you're a little more limited when it's so linear.
Oh, for sure. Yeah,
that's a good point. Maybe that's where his process is when doing this song, but I don't know.
I'm not saying it's good. I'm not saying he's doing a good job with it. I'm just saying he had options.
I mean, yes. And it's good to have options as a vocalist. You don't want to be stale.
Overall, Mark, how much have you heard of Gary in Extreme? Have you had a good chance to listen to everything from the first album till...
I've listened to their first two in their entireties, and then some of their other things kind of sprinkled here and there.
Is his style different back in the beginning? Because they definitely had more of the stadium rock 80s kind of vibe there.
Yeah. It felt like at least some of the stuff post 80s that I heard from them sounded like it was their desperate attempt to stay relevant and try to transform into what was happening.
Like on Three Sides?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. That was very much their, like, Queen, like, very theatrical, like, album, three acts kind of thing.
It's like when Slayer did a specific nu metal type album during the nu metal craze in the late 90s, and it did not work for them.
Is he better on a more than words type vocals, or is he better when he's, you know, putting some muscle into it?
You know, that is a funny question, because now that I think of it, I think best Gary is harmonizing Gary.
Himself or with Nuno?
With Nuno. Oh, definitely. Yeah, yeah. He can't do it without Nuno. I mean, he could, because I think Gary's a capable singer. However, Nuno's right there, so why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
why wouldn't you always? So I think the duo combination of Gary and Nuno together is the best vocal version of Extreme.
Yeah, I mean,
maybe without Nuno, he's not as comfortable.
Could be. It very well could be. And, you know, it makes me wonder how much better the songs might have been if Nuno had been a part of Van Halen.
Right. He's just like, Eddie, this is what he wants.
Tell Gary, he's like, you can sing for us. And he's like, I'll sing for you, but one stipulation. I got to bring Nuno with me.
Rave of Flame says, every song that I heard from Van Halen 3 sounds like Gary's auditioning for a spot in the band.
It really does. That's what's so disappointing about this journey and exploring this particular album, because it's just... it breaks my heart every time we listen to a track. There is so much, like, potential that could have happened had they done things a different way. Because again, we don't hate Gary. We like him. We think he's a great singer. I think he's a very capable singer. But what he's doing in Van Halen 3, it just does not work for me at all.
Well, remember, this is a band that turned David Lee Roth down how many times before they finally said, okay, you're a decent singer. And then they, you know, I'm not sure I really trust their process of choosing vocalists for the band.
I mean, argument there.
But. Well, Ted Templeman agreed with them, so they may have been on the right track. So,
well, initially they let him in the band because he had a PA system they didn't want to rent anymore. Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
We've been there. Necessity band members. It happens.
I would have thought that was some...
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. I would have thought that was some story that Eddie came up with later when he was pissed off at Dave. But in that early interview that was recently released on Van Halen News Desk, like, he was talking about it, even like on their first tour that oh yeah, well, he had a PA system, so
yeah. Yeah, it was in Greg Runoff's book that was they turned down Dave twice, and then they figured, we're sick of renting the PA from this guy, let's just let him in the band and use it for free. But you can't believe everything you read on Van Halen News Desk.
Depends on who the author is. Check the byline.
All right, let's get back to some extreme. All right, I got to chime in here for Michelle. She says, if I'm not familiar with Extreme and want to do some historical research and hear them, do you guys have an album you would recommend? Well, 100% for me, it's Extreme 2 Pornograffiti. Oh, one of my favorite records of all time.
Yes, really,
they're all good, but Extreme 2 Pornograffiti for me is a real standout. Do you guys have one that you would recommend to Michelle?
Yeah, I mean, two. But man, that first album is pretty damn good too. Mother, Don't Want to Go to School Again, because if you like Van Halen, you're gonna love that. That's got the flange. That's the Unchained thing.
I like Extreme One.
Kid Ego, Play With Me. Yeah,
Play With Me might be their best song.
Yes,
it may be.
Arguably, yeah.
Yes,
it's certainly probably Nuno's best song. Arguably,
yeah. in all the great reasons, you know. Yes, in all the ways.
Anybody listen to Sade's The Rock? That was their latest 2008, right? That's a good record.
Great.
I'm glad you brought that up, Corey. Love it. But one more quick. It's a Monster from Pornograffiti. Fucking awesome. And I saw them when they opened for Dave in 91. I hadn't gotten the album yet, and I heard that song, and I was like, I'm getting this. But yeah, Sade's The Rock, and thank you for pronouncing it, Corey, because I was afraid I was going to pronounce it wrong.
How are you going to say it?
I think I was going to go with that. Saudades de Rock. No, Saudades de Rock. That's a really cool one. And I'll tell you, there are some songs on there. Let's see. Ghost and Interface. Those are my picks from that one. Yep. Do you remember those, Corey?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I love that.
Run is fantastic, too.
Which one? Yep. Run. Okay, yeah.
Run's a good one, yeah.
And, but see, all songs written by Betancourt and Cherone, man. They're the...
Yep. They're the main, and they've been teasing a new album on their social media, right?
They're right.
Putting out little teasers here and there, so hopefully we're getting something new from them. Go ahead, Scott.
I would point people to the opener from Pornograffiti. Decadence Dance. To me, that's the Gary we needed to hear on Van Halen 3. If you listen to him, I mean, incredible.
You hear the thunder and lightning and this. Mother's calling her son home, and then you hear Gary kick in with that riff. That was
Three Sides to Every Story is like a big change up in style, but the first act, so like the first third of the album, is very much in the previous vein of the group, and Cupid's Dead is an amazing one where he does like this whole long almost rap just in one breath, and she's like, how the hell did he do that? He has some lungs.
Am I ever going to change?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. The latter half of the album with the strings and it's just this epic sound, and he's just amazing on it with just soaring vocals. Yeah. Definitely different style from the originals, but that one's a really great one too. Yeah.
I don't think I ever listened to that. So I'm looking on Wikipedia. So it's three acts,
besides every story.
How did they release it on vinyl? Was it a single record, or was it?
It was
a single record. They just split sides two and three, or they combined two and three on the second side, basically. There isn't one album that's a disappointment for me. I mean, you know, I've been a fan of them since that second album came out, and then I went back and got that first one.
We couldn't help you. We pretty much recommended everything.
Yeah, so. Sorry, Michelle. We couldn't come up with anything.
Before we get back to the song, Am I the only one that felt a Led Zeppelin influence in that last section?
Oh, yeah, especially with the drums.
Interesting.
Pure Bonham, yeah.
I thought the guitars, too. I thought that was very, felt very Jimmy Page, maybe a little more progressive than his normal stuff, but along that line.
Yeah.
I could hear that, yeah.
All right. He's definitely influenced by Hendrix, too, if you listen closely. Mm-hmm. Some Hendrix in there.
Yeah. All right, let's get back to her. Just be patient. Reading lyrics on a fade out? Cool.
I was just going to say that because, you know, as good, I was, talking about the, you know, going back to what's the album that you'd introduced him, I think it would be Pornograffiti. Just, and this, that little lead out shows why I would pick that one, because Nuno can play, he can shred with the best of them, but then he's got these massive funk chops that he can just throw in and he can sprinkle them in, right? And that's just pure funk playing. It's so cool, man.
Yeah.
And those little triplets he's playing on that, on the strums, like, Jesus Christ.
That was, yeah, yeah. He's
a lot of funk in extreme.
People need to talk more about Nuno.
Yep.
One of the Austin trademarks making a cameo.
Yeah.
Now it's gone.
One of the trademarks of their style is just a lot of those like hemiola patterns that go over the measure. So like where it just takes it out of time and it just kind of keeps pushing it forward and forward. And it just, it's a great, this one did that too. So it's nice to hear that.
So Corey, where is that from again? Is that a B-side or Japanese?
Probably Japanese, unreleased in the U.S., so probably on the Japanese release of Waiting for the Punchline.
That's cool.
Should have been released everywhere, though. Pretty good track.
Yeah. But hell yeah.
I guess we have to vote, right, Mark?
Yeah, I was about to say, like, should we go ahead and vote? How do we want to do this? Do we just say, like, all in favor, raise your, you know, thumbs up or thumbs down, and we talk about why?
Your show.
Yeah, you're fuck it, man. Your show.
Fuck it. All right. So, everyone, would you say that this song in the extreme world is what dreams are made of, or is the dream over? And hold them up now.
Geez, that's everybody. I'm going to play the clip.
That's a full sweep. I'll just, you know, say just real quick. Although I disagreed with what Gary chose to do with those verses vocally, this is just a good song. And this is a really good demonstration of, if you are someone who only knows extreme from More Than Words and you didn't realize, no, they're actually like a really kick-ass hard rock band. I think this is a good representation of just a little bit of what you can expect, because they utilize so many things that they're good at and blend it all into one song, and it makes it sound fantastic. So yes, that's my vote, and that is why. Corey, how about you?
Well, regarding Lulu, our friends who are breaking down the Lulu album with Metallica, oof, and Lou Reed said meh. And I mean, if you're doing a whole podcast on Lulu and you thought that was meh, holy cow, way to go, Chaz. Welcome to the chat, Chaz, and good job on episode one of your podcast. I'm really interested to see how that one goes. He wasn't a big fan. I dug it, though. It was fun. It was cooking. It was rocking. Band was tight. Gary sounded great. I really dug the lyrics, too, because Fairweather Faith kind of hits home with me. So, there was nothing not to like for me. Kevin Brown, what did you think?
Yeah, lots of good elements in that song, too, right? There's enough in there where it would change, and there's enough interesting stuff in there where it's a pretty simple sort of lyrical content. He's, you know, like I said, he's laying it all over the line, but there's enough going on in there. I said, I like the drums. I thought the drums were great. Some good pushes in there. I think that some of that stuff at the end, the funk stuff at the end from Nuno, was off the chart fun. Yeah, it's a good song. I'm glad I heard that tonight.
Let's go to George. What do you think, George?
Yeah, I voted a thumbs up on this one. Only familiar with the first two Extreme albums. This song gives me a pretty good idea of what I'm missing. I liked it. It was a fun hard rock song. The drums, although I thought maybe they were a little loud, they sounded good. The bass sounded good. And Gary, he was killing it. I like the lyrics. The whole at the end when he's saying, I ain't talking about the weather over and over. I think that part has some swagger to it. It's fun. And it sort of reinforces the message of the song. Like, if you didn't get it, if you took the lyrics at face value, like, go back and read it again because you're missing something in there. So that's what I like about that end where he keeps saying, I ain't talking about the weather. It's fun. That's a good song. I'm probably going to listen to this whole album later.
Hell yeah. Ryan Powell, how about you, man?
Yeah, this is a great extension of the rest of that album, which I've loved. So it's really cool to hear something new from it that I didn't even know was there. Echo what everybody else is saying. I mean, Gary sounds great in it. I kind of like what he's doing in the verses, just when he gets to Wail, and he just seems right in the pocket with Nuno on the harmonies. So yeah, definitely a thumbs up from me.
All right. How about we go right on over to Scott Haskin?
Well, Mark, I got to agree with you on the vocals. I thought the delivery could have been, it just wasn't interesting to me. It was almost just too straightforward. But overall, I thought that the music was pretty good. The music really saved it for me because I was a bit on the fence because of the vocals. And I didn't really like the balance between the drums and bass. But musically, really, this song kicks ass.
Right on. And Scott Everett, how about yourself?
Much the same as you said, Mark. I think you nailed it. That I wasn't comfortable with how he was singing the verses at all, but the choruses was really good, and I loved the way it closed. So I'm not the biggest Extreme fan, but it was a thumbs up for me.
Cool.
Before we get into Eric, because he'll talk for half an hour, did we get Scott McGraw?
Might as well get the third Scott, right?
Moving on over to Scott Monroe. How you doing?
Good. Yeah. Now we talk a lot about Van Halen harmonies, Extreme harmonies, man. That was on full display here, and Gary just fits so well with them. I think I got to call out that high note he hit at the end there too. Very nice, Gary. And Nuno is just shredding. Nuno never disappoints.
Absolutely. So then, Eric Sinich, what you got?
It's on par with everything else that was on the album. It could very well have been on that album. Gary's vocals with Extreme, they never stood out. They never took anything away from the song. Overall, it's the music I'm listening to, and I always just love the sound of Extreme. The harmonies are great. On this album, it took a little bit of adjusting because it was different than anything they had done before that. But once I gave it a few listens, it settled in pretty quickly. And to listen to this album now, I think it's worth a listen because at the time grunge was big. So you're listening to it through that kind of lens, like expecting to hear grunge, Pearl Jam, Stone Temple Pilots type music on the radio. Now listen to it on its own, and it stands on its own. It's unfortunate. Didn't get a lot of airplay, not a lot of support, but definitely thumbs up.
There you are. So there's our first. What?
Hey, Eric, there's something that I wanted to discuss. And you brought this up before when it was 1995 and it was the rise of grunge and it was a big thing in the music scene then. But I feel like so was funk. You know, you had Red Hot Chili Peppers making a name for themselves during that era, starting to rise to a real big popularity. To me, it's kind of weird that Extreme never got a bump from that. And maybe it's just that the record company felt very biased against bands that started in the 80s at this period in time. But if you put this on the radio right next to Red Hot Chili Peppers, I think people would have liked it in the 90s.
Yeah, I think it would. Unfortunately, Extreme was not going to be put on the playlist for any kind of modern rock formats, which the Chili Peppers were a rarity. Chili Peppers were on mainstream rock stations, but they were also on modern rock stations at that time. And so program directors wouldn't have given Extreme at the time of day, you know, when they were playing, Sponge Molly and, Red Hot Chili Peppers and Screaming Trees. And you're not going to put you're not going to put Extreme in there. So they had to market them towards straight ahead rock radio. And that was the problem, because the funk side of Extreme is straight legit, but they never really pushed that angle anyway. It was always, let's get them in there with the 80s bands. Let's package them with David Lee Roth and Cinderella, which they did in 91. So that was what they were up against. It's what they were, all those bands were up against.
Yeah.
I mean, as soon as all of those bands, and you remember Winger tried heavy, they go hard and heavy on, what was that album trying to remember the name of the album that they had. It was like really like almost like heavy metal. Warrant kind of tried that a little bit. Some of those bands tried different things, but it didn't work. It was really just a matter of do your thing, wait it out a decade, and this stuff's going to come back again, and you'll do okay. With Extreme, they always had their following. They still do. So thankfully, they were able to survive that.
Did these guys get lumped in then with, because obviously being from UK and being a little bit separated from that, did these guys over here get lumped in with the hair metal?
Oh yeah.
With it?
Oh, right. Absolutely.
Yeah, they're a completely different level.
Absolutely.
That, yeah. You know?
No, they were a hair band. Okay. And they came at the tail end and that was it. They were forced. Now with Pornography, they were able to at least get out of that a little bit, but then the problem was More Than Words. And you have people that don't even know that they're even a hard rock band.
Right.
They just thought that they were, your light favorites band. Yeah. Like Eddie said, the hit. As he said, we all know they have the hit. And that was the thing they were up against. They were a band that loved to try all different styles. It was hard for them to just stick with one lane, not like an AC/DC thing. Like, this is what we do. We're going to do it. So that was hard too for the record labels to say, okay, what are we going to do with this?
Yeah.
Like they had a lot of those albums had a lot of different styles to them. Yeah. So, yeah. But you know what? What's cool about being an Extreme fan now, you're not going to have to pay a ton of money to go see him. You go see him in a nice club up front, pay 30, 40, 50 bucks, and you see a damn good band.
Yeah.
Unless they're opening for Aerosmith and they're charging $300 for nosebleeds.
Right. Right. But they're going to play, they'll play the clubs, they'll play the venues that you have to mortgage your home to get in.
Like Springsteen, that was a big talk on social media this week.
Don't get me started on that.
All right.
Talking about ticket prices.
Yeah.
That'll be, we'll be here all night.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if we're going to be here all night, we might as well listen to another song. So,
exactly.
I'd love to play a Dave solo song, man.
We can spin solo until we get a Dave song. We can spin live. We can spin regular. What's the will of the people on the band?
What else?
A song with Jason Becker on it, man, because Jason Becker was just, what a fucking story, that dude. Yeah. Inspirational and a great guitarist.
Well, I enjoyed listening to something I hadn't heard before, so I think the solo thing is, that's kind of cool when you get those tracks, right? So,
what else is on the wheel, Corey? Dave, Sammy, Kev, Wolfgang in there?
Yep, we got Wolfie in there.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, the deluxe edition of Mammoth WVH with the extra tracks is on there.
All right.
Said, Eddie and Alex, Respect the Wind is on there. Eddie from the Wildlife is on there. Every Dave solo track. And for Sammy, because he had like double the catalog of everybody, I put his anthology on, which takes us up to about 2008. And then I put Chickenfoot, Sammy in the Circle, and his solo albums from 2008 on. So
Montrose?
No Montrose. Well, there's one track on the anthology for Montrose, but we're not a Montrose web podcast. So,
can you just rewind? Rewind, like, I don't know, 30 seconds, Corey. Did you say there's a song called Respect the Wind?
Yeah, from
Twister soundtrack.
Yeah.
Oh, right. Yeah. I thought that was Spinal Tap.
No, no, that's Break Like the Wind, my friend.
There you go.
Break Like the Wind. Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to bring this bad boy back. This is the solo wheel here. I don't know if the guys in the call can see this, but that's like 250 some. Tracks are on this bad boy. All right. Because it's our thing, I'm going to bring up Runaround. We'll spin the solo wheel again. We'll see what we get. You boys ready?
Ready.
Do it.
All right. Here we go.
Here we go.
Come on, Dave. Come on, Dave. And we're going to get... Well, it's another waiting for the punchline. Maybe we don't go. What are the odds? You know what? We're going to close that.
Mulligan.
Yeah, we're mulliganing that for sure.
Because it's fuck it February. And right. It can't be fuck it February unless we say fuck it at least a
That's
few
That's right.
Anarchy, no rules.
No rules whatsoever. That's why it's fuck it February.
And no sobriety.
Cheers, George.
I do feel very out of control right now.
All right. No more extreme. No offense to extreme, but we've already got one. Let's play this again.
Yeah. Here we go.
All right. And we are going to come down to Sammy Hagar and Friends Rambling Gambling Man. Is that a song people want to listen to?
What? Rambling Gambling Man?
Rambling Gambling Man from the album Sammy Hagar and Friends.
Oh, I have that. Yeah. Oh, my God.
Is that like a Kenny Rogers remake?
I like this reaction.
If that is never the case,
then I have to hear it.
I do not
That's
know this
a good
album,
but that song is not. No, that song's. I'm trying to remember that one.
We could spin
is this
again.
A cover?
It might be.
I searched Ramblin' Gamblin' Man. It says Bob Seger on Google.
Yeah, there you go. Of course it is. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I think the majority of that album is covers, if I remember correctly. Sammy Hagar and Friends.
Yeah, there's some good stuff on there. There
you
is.
Want to go again? Stuff. Who wants to go again? Everybody?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, pretty much. Fuck it. Fuck it. Third time's a charm.
Here we go.
Come on, ladies' night in Buffalo. No, we're gonna get. Fuck off! Waiting for the punchline. Jesus.
Oh my God!
For a third time.
You know, the upside is we get to keep listening to a pretty fucking great song.
Just the first part of it, though.
Just the first part.
I sense John Mariano in this.
Eddie Van Halen, Fashion Dynasty. That must be from The Wildlife.
The fuck is going on around here?
I don't know. Let's do it. Let's hear something fucking weird.
Let's say, if it's Eddie, if it's Eddie, we're all in, right?
I sense the ghost of Mariano in all of this.
Oh, yeah. I thought he was going to be here tonight. That son of a bitch. I heard you say he was.
Even when he's not here.
All right. That was the beginning of it. We won't play it yet. But Eric, maybe tell us a little bit, because I'm sure you know, how did Eddie Van Halen get to do the score to the movie The Wildlife?
Oh, God. You're gonna put this on me? Oh, God. I'm trying to remember. Did it have a connection with Valerie? I think Valerie knew somebody that was working on the movie, and they asked him to do it, and he said, yeah. I think it's really as simple as that, but I could be wrong. Trying to remember. I've never seen it. I know the beginnings of... Yeah, the beginnings of Right Now are in there.
I tell you what, I saw it once in the 80s, written by Cameron Crowe, who has done some
Cameron Crowe.
Stuff.
Yeah.
He did Jerry Maguire, he did Almost Famous. It stars Chris Penn. That was supposed to be his big breakout role. Leah Thompson, Ian Mitchell-Smith, Jenny Wright, Eric Stoltz, Rick Moranis, Hart Bochner, and Randy Quaid. There you go.
Man, that's a pretty all-star. Sherilyn Fenn. Oh, that's a big cast in this movie.
Right. But I want to say Valerie knew somebody. That's the connection. I can't remember. Eric Stoltz, by the way, was the original Marty McFly in Back to the Future.
Yeah.
That's right. He lasted 2-3 weeks. Yeah.
Right.
Okay. Right. So according to Wikipedia, Edward Van Halen wrote and performed the score for the film, but was unable to finish mixing due to Van Halen's touring schedule and left the task to the band's long-term engineer, Don Landy. The instrumental Donut City was the only original Eddie Van Halen composition appearing on the soundtrack album.
Right.
Donut City. What a great name for a song.
Yeah.
And we're not getting Donut City. We're getting, the fuck's this thing called? Fashion Life? Fashion Dynasty.
Now, yeah, and I think when you in that scene from Back to the Future when they're when Marty, Michael Jay. I think some of the music from this was used when he plays the cassette and Michael J. Fox is in the spaceman uniform.
When he's Darth Vader, yeah, and he played.
I'm Darth Vader. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was definitely Eddie Van Halen. I'm not sure what track that came from, but.
Not this one.
Not this one.
Well, wait a minute. This if there was only one original song from Eddie Van Halen, then who is this?
He did the score. I think that was the only one that came on the soundtrack or that was included on the soundtrack.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. This is actually clipped out of the movie. What part of the movie this came from, I couldn't tell you. Fashion Dynasty. I haven't seen The Wildlife in forever. Don't know if it's streaming anywhere. Mark, you're the movie expert on the panel. Do you know Fashion Dynasty?
Probably if I hear it, but I've been trying to rack my brains as to where I might have heard it as far as like movie or TV or something, but I'm not sure.
All right. Well, according to Corey,
also count for your Backtracks theme music?
In a way, yes. We got a twofer here tonight. Thank you, George.
Crossover.
Yeah. Yeah, except we can't really talk about the movie because none of us have seen it. But apparently the short piece of background music was used during the scene at the Fashion Dynasty store at the mall.
That's fair.
All right. So it's a minute 24. Here we go. This is Fashion Dynasty, Eddie Van Halen from the Wildlife soundtrack. Just what everyone was hoping for, an Eddie Van Halen synth number.
I like it.
That's him on the electric drums.
Everything's electric on that. Yeah, there's
that's all him. That's all him. That was the name of the store in the mall, the Fashion Dynasty. So yeah,
classic 80s film underscore.
Oh, God, no kidding. Kidding.
Yeah. It sounds like it needs to be set to a montage.
100%
driving through LA.
Even Rocky had a montage. Scott, you're a composer. Scott Haskin, should say. We have three Scotts to every story.
I am.
As a composer, what are your thoughts listening to the first 18 seconds of Fashion Dynasty?
You know, I've had to write pieces like this before, and they're not that difficult to do. They're just not. It's really just it's harder to mix them than it is to write them. You just get a grooving bass line, a straight beat on the drums, and you just put in a couple of little synth lines on top of that, and you're good to go. But yeah, I can definitely see like a Rocky montage or a driving through the streets of LA kind of montage over this. Opening credits, actually, this would be a good opening credits piece where you're just kind of setting the tone for the film. It's a good piece for that style of movie, but it's just, there's nothing real special about it.
Not yet.
Not yet. There's only 18 seconds of it so far.
maybe it'll change. Eddie likes to, fly off the cusp and give us something cool.
The last minute is going to be just a ripping Eddie solo. Just you wait. Yeah. Fingers
on
crossed.
The guitar.
So
80s. It's one of those songs that makes me feel unfit because it feels like it's a gym montage.
I want to get on my leg warmers.
Man, I'm fat.
Gotta start running.
Jane Fonda workout.
There you go.
It's got that Danger Zone feeling from Top Gun, right?
Yeah, right.
The way that it moves about the same tempo, it has that grooving bass line. I mean, it's just classic era music.
Interestingly enough, too, Eddie was approached about doing music for that last one. But he wasn't feeling good.
Really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, Maverick.
Oh, we got a Kelsey Van Halen is chiming in. Hope you guys are having fun on the road in Cali. She was helping her brother move this weekend. Wish I could join in and enjoy yourselves. Thank you, Kelsey. We all love you. Hope you're safe in California, having a great trip.
If she's on the road in California, I've got a perfect driving montage song for her that we're up right now.
Rave of Flames says, I just heard Flashdance. Yes, we all did.
Yeah, Flashdance.
What a feeling.
I know what I'm putting this to because I've done a couple of montages for you, Corey. The scene in The Warriors where they're running away from the baseball fury.
Yes.
Perfect. It fits perfectly.
That perfect. That's the one.
I just kept looking out at Scott Everett just slowly shaking his head like, I could have been anywhere on a Saturday night and I'm with these assholes listening to this.
No. It's so 80s. And yeah. I'm trying to remember in the movie, Rick Moranis played a douchebag's fashion store owner. And I'm trying to remember where exactly it fit in the movie as it's playing. So no, wow. It's not with being with you guys. I may have wanted to rather hear a Van Halen song versus this, but we're good. We're good.
Well, guess what? We're going to spit again. This is only a minute 24. So don't worry.
Well, and this is like what around the same time as like Beverly Hills Cop and Harry Faltermeyer.
Harry Faltermeyer. Yep. And Fletch.
Love Fletch. Yep. Did you see the new one, Eric? Confess Fletch, good movie.
Surprisingly good. The bar was set high for me because Fletch is my all-time favorite comedy film. Yep. And it was really good.
I read all the
John Hamm did nice. Yep.
He nailed it, man. Nailed it. I could just picture Eddie, you know, like the mad scientist cigarette hanging out of his mouth in that studio, you know, just all night, just having fun with that shit.
Yeah.
You know, big smile on his face, just doing whatever he wanted on the keyboards. That was when he was really getting into the synths.
Yeah. And when you're writing to spec like this, you've only got a certain, you know, the scene lasts this long. You got to write this piece of music for this scene. It's a good piece of incidental music. There's nothing wrong with it. Right. And I don't know where it fits in the music. I'd have to watch the movie, but it's fine for what it is. It's just, you know, we're all sitting here waiting for some shredding and some, you know, some harmony.
Alan Tigg says, listening to this, I keep waiting for Rebecca Mornay, Dio Mornay, I think he means, to enter and take her clothes off, which is a business.
Right.
So thank you very much for that. Good call.
I'll be okay with that.
Yeah.
This is all around the time he's writing I'll Wait and Jump, to think about that.
Yeah.
Not on par. But the...
Oh, God. Hillbilly Scribs is in the chat, helping some single moms pay for college right now. How's everybody doing? He's currently drunk in a strip club. So God bless you, Hillbilly. Nice. We're having fun. Not as much fun as you are, buddy, but yeah.
Yeah.
Be saving that fun over there, Jeff.
All right, Burke, you want to do another mass vote on this one?
All right, mass vote, just like last time. Is this a particular piece by Eddie Van Halen? What?
Well, everybody majority? Open up their fingers. I'll play the clip for the majority. So,
which finger would you like?
Either one.
Probably that one. Okay.
Yes or no. And
oh, man. I'm going, it's Eddie. I don't give a fuck. I'm going thumbs up.
Me, Kevin, and George. Three of us said no, but the majority, 60 of you said yes. So.
It's better than how many say aye. Okay, let's put it. Let's.
Yes, it
well,
is.
Well, I'll fight you on that one.
That's a low I'll bar clear. That
yeah, it's a low all bar I'll clear, absolutely.
I would just say, as a massive fan of synthwave, and when people still ask, like, what exactly is synthwave, this track right here is the personification. Like, it's that.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
This right here, this what Eddie it. Did. This is synthwave. Now, I mean, because we all know that sound. We all know how it typically goes. We're all making 80s references. That's the whole thing. And there's a big movement of retro synthwave happening now in our modern day, and I love it. So naturally, I'm going to love this, even though it's a nothing song. It's just there. But there Mark, you go. Yay.
I'm going to piggyback off of you, Mark, because I'm a synthwave fan, and that to me is my justification for why I voted this one down personally. Wow. I think like only a third of us voted it down. That's okay. But this is like a minute and a half of just very basic synth music. And this is not something I would be more excited to listen to than a modern synthwave artist like Carpenter Brood or Mitch Murder, who are, they're taking that sound and it's a little more developed, and this is just kind of fluff.
To me, well, you got to know what you got to know what it was put together for. You got to imagine it was like a weird science-ish type movie at that time frame, and him doing a shred or something like that. And that movie makes absolutely no sense at all. What they used it for in this spot kind of did. So it kind of just fits what it was meant for.
Oh man, now I'm just thinking of Kelly LeBrock. Damn it.
Sorry.
Weird science. Yeah.
I'm still on Phoebe Cates from Fast Times at Ridgemont High, which was also written by Cameron Crowe.
Yeah. Any Kraftwerk fans here?
Some. Kraftwerk. Yeah, some. Yeah.
I'm trying to understand how somebody can complain about thinking of Kelly LeBrock.
Yeah. And why I'm mentioning Kraftwerk when we're talking about Kelly LeBrock. Right. What's wrong with me?
Of course.
What if Eddie, what if Flock of Seagulls came to Eddie and said, we'd like to have you join our band? I think Eddie would have been good for Flock of Seagulls, maybe making that kind of music.
I think two words with one syllable each would work there, you know.
Right, anybody else want to chime in on a
photograph of you?
Yeah, I will. As a piece of film music, for it being underscore, and so underscore is really just meant to support the film, but in the 80s they put it a little bit more up front. I don't know what was going on in the scene, so I have to judge it as a standalone piece. And for the style of music that it is, it's fine. It's not supposed to solo, it's not supposed to be a shred and rock song. It's supposed to just carry the film. And it's interesting, he didn't just repeat the pattern over and over. He put in a couple of minor things to make it change just enough so that it wasn't annoying. I think for what it is, it's a good piece of music.
That's where I'll disagree with you, Scott, because I don't think he changed enough to keep it from being annoying. To me, it was way too repetitive.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, I think just to follow on that, I think the same thing. If it was a little repetitive, but given that it's underscore, it makes sense. I think I would have been a little bit more on the fence were it not for, you know, how he changes up the chords and kind of changes the emphasis of things. So it's not just that same repeated bass line over and over with just a couple chords on it. Yeah. So I think it did just enough to make it more interesting for what it was.
And that's just it. Like this kind of music is not designed to be listened to standalone. It's really not. And so it's kind of tough to judge on that basis. It's not like film scores now where they're done designed to sell a film soundtrack. Back then they were just writing for the film and they were licensing hits to be able to sell the soundtrack. So it's kind of hard to judge as a standalone piece, but since that's the position that we're in, I did like it, but I could definitely understand your arguments against it.
Yeah, so I enjoyed the synth, like the lead was good, but it was that bass line that just was super repetitive, and I didn't love the drum choices. I'm sure that's a Lynn. I don't think it's Eddie actually playing a Simmons or something. It sounds like it's just a really programmed drum part, right? When you've got Eddie could have totally played that on a Simmons or something, and you'd get a bit more, I don't know, like you say, you don't really want to swing in this song, but you get a bit of feel to it. So I don't know, it's just a bit flat. So yeah.
We'll get back to you in a second, Eric. Raven Flame says, ironically, my wife is in another room watching Mannequin. Talk about your mom.
Oh, yeah, there's another one. There's another one. Yeah, yeah. But what's interesting is when you listen to it, it's probably the only time you would say you wouldn't even know it's Eddie. You know, normally when you hear Eddie playing, you know it's him.
Yeah.
You know, I wouldn't, if I'm hearing that in a movie, I'm not saying, oh my God, that's Eddie. I could tell. So, you know, I think he was just doing his job, doing what he was asked to do. And, you know, by the way, what's the David Lee Roth connection to Weird Science?
He's in the video montage when they're feeding photos into the scanner to make the perfect
woman. Oh, yeah.
Dave's in there.
Oh.
And
they play Just a Gigolo, the video, I think, for a second or something.
Yes, but also Bump and Grind. They play Bump and Grind when they're in the mall.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Forgot about that.
That's right.
What is the greatest 80s film? There's a good question.
There's
so many.
Greatest,
to name.
Yeah.
Yeah, you go back. Yeah, well, I mean, I'd say Back to the Future because it's probably one of the best films I've
made. Back to the Future to me is.
Yeah, a lot of those movies.
Those quintessentially 80s movies, a lot of them are problematic now when you go back and look at them now.
I mean, right. Yeah.
You know, they're so.
Now, Back to the Future, every time it's on, I watch. Breakfast Club, yeah.
Breakfast Club.
That's a great one.
Yeah, classic. The 80s was great for films.
Oh yeah,
some good.
I see you, Ryan. I see you.
This is Spinal Tap came out in the
80s. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that is part one of Fuck It February here on And the Podcast Will Rock. Part two coming up right away. You guys want to check that out. We're actually talking Van Halen on that episode. We spin a Van Halen track from our regular wheel. Plus, we do a spin from the live wheel, too, and actually spin a cut from Van Halen's last ever public show in Hollywood in 2015. But until then, on behalf of my broadcast partner, Mark Meyer, and myself, Corey Morissette, thank you very much for listening. We are And the Podcast Will Rock, and we will rock you later.